all we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't gonna let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't gonna let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
What you were listening to at the beginning was probably one of the greatest moments in the history of speeches by perhaps the greatest orator ever, certainly one of them, and certainly at least of the 1900s, Martin Luther King Jr., giving what would come to be known as his I've Been to the Mountaintop speech on April 3rd, 1968, where he spoke in support of striking sanitation workers at Mason Temple in Memphis. Pretty fucking powerful stuff. If that doesn't move you, you should try listening to Madonna's The Immaculate Collection. And if that doesn't move you, you're probably dead. That speech was given a couple days before his death. That was his last speech ever, as if it wasn't charged enough. You can listen to it now, even supercharged, knowing those facts. Great stuff. So welcome to Art House Radio. I'm your host, Troy Ramos. And let me get this out of the way. Sometimes I say Ramos, and sometimes I say Ramos. You know, in a lot of ways, I don't really care. As long as you say Troy correctly, that's kind of all that matters. If I say Ramos, which is what I've said most of my life, pretty much all of my life, then, you know, I get a little funny looks from people, Spanish-speaking peoples, or people who share the same ethnicity that I do. You know, my grandparents were from Michoacan in Mexico. Their families came here from that beautiful state, which I've never been to but would like to, in Mexico. And sometimes if I say Ramos, then people who know me as Ramos look at me like, what, you're authentic now? And let me clear this. I've never been authentic. All right. I am inauthentic. That is my thing. Don't ever question that. All right. So sometimes I'm going to bounce back and forth. Whatever. Get over it. This, my friends, is episode number 50. All right. We made it 50 episodes deep. After doing a couple of episodes at the beginning, I thought, well, you know, whatever. I'll maybe do 5 or 6 episodes. It'll be like a little project and it'll be done. But no, here I am 50 episodes later. Feels good. Feels real good. So why do I do it? Well, I get to have lots of interesting conversations with artists and thinkers and writers and musicians and poets, artists in the community, community activists, all kinds of people. I'm very lucky. I've had so many people in my life that were so interesting, and I'm not sure why they found me interesting, but we ended up having interesting conversations, and that led to this podcast, and we're still here, 50 episodes later. I want to thank everybody who's subscribed and downloaded and written reviews, which if you haven't done, you should do it. All the tweets and the Facebook comments and Instagram likes, all the little private messages that get sent to me sometime from people in Australia or other places. I hear you down there. I love it. Keep it coming. But yeah, I get to have interesting conversations like the one I was privileged enough to have today with artist Pariza Gareri. Who is she? Well, she's an artist from Iran originally, and she moved to Michigan at some point, and she did her MFA at the University of Michigan studying art, and she's got some really interesting video works, and she actually sent a poem into me, and I played it, I believe, at the beginning of the last episode that was on Terrence McKenna. It was called Purple Flower, so if you haven't heard that, you should go back and check it out. You can find a lot of her stuff at pghaderi.com. That's pghaderi.com. You just search for her name on Vimeo, at pghaderi on Instagram. And we'll put a bunch of links up on our social media. So you can just, like, you know, a couple of clicks. You don't have to type anything. You can just go to our social media sites, which I assume you follow, right? At arthouse43 on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/arthouse43. Huh? You're on those, right? You wouldn't lie to me. All right. Well, I had an interesting conversation with her. We talked a lot about arts and moving around. We're living in that time where people are traveling a lot, and it's a very transportation friendly era, right? But sometimes when you leave where you grew up, it's exciting at first. And then you realize, oh, now I kind of feel like I don't have a home anymore. Where is my home? And Paris actually had a really great quote from Emily Dickinson that you'll have to listen to find out what it is, but it's great. It'll be worth it. That alone, I think, is worth it, but I think you'll enjoy the rest of the conversation too. So let's get to it. This is episode number 50, and I'm talking with artist Pariza Gareri. Enjoy. Thank you. It doesn't. Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Hi.
Can you see me?
No.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me fix that. Okay, that should do it. Is that?
Okay. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Look at all the equipment there.
It looks complicated, but I promise you, it's just a simple setup. It's all an illusion designed to make me look sophisticated. Can I ask you, how do you say your name? Because I
Parisa. Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. And your last name?
It's Guderi.
Okay, I said it right. I used your poem on an earlier episode, and I pronounce it like that. So that's good, I guess.
That's good. Yes. Close enough.
Close enough. Well, yeah. It's important, right? I mean, it's kind of like they're just words in a way, but you grow up with it, and people have called me Tony before or Tori, and it's not a huge deal, but it says something to me about sometimes how much people listen. If they say hi, I'm Troy, and they go, oh, hi, Tony, or like 2 minutes later they say hi, Tony, you think like, well, I don't know, maybe you weren't listening or what. I don't know.
I think people pick whatever it's easier for them to pronounce, you know. So I found out that, like, because I live in a Persian community, and like I can hear like how like our names are so much different than like English names.
That's
and
true.
I think some people don't even bother to try, you know, so they go with what's easier for them.
That makes sense, because sometimes I don't want to be unfairly critical of people who maybe don't have the ability either to hear those accents or the different tones.
Yeah. But it's funny what in Farsi language,
sure,
there's no like accent or emphasis on like syllables of the words.
Really?
And yes, so it's so funny that when I pronounce my name like the way that I'm used to be called at home, mm-hmm, people are like, oh, we cannot pronounce it that way. It's like so funny. Yeah, because they have to put an emphasis on one or like the, at least on like either like syllabus, and just, yeah. Because in Iran, it's Parisa, but my friends cannot pronounce that way.
In Iran, it's Parisa.
Yeah.
But here it's Parisa or...
Yes.
Interesting. Very subtle difference, but it's such a huge... It's an interesting thing, syllables.
Yeah.
I never noticed that before. Is that a Western thing, you think, or is it more of an American thing?
I think it's... Maybe, I don't know. I haven't been in other countries, but I think maybe it's a Western English language speaking thing.
It happens to everyone, I think. Every country has, you know, the French say things certain ways, and they're, I'm not a linguist, but I do love foreign language. And I think that you're almost the shape of your throat and all the stuff in there happens according to which culture you grow up in.
Yeah, that's so true.
I was watching, I saw the movie Lo and Behold yesterday. It's, I don't know if you know Werner Herzog, the film director, the German film director. It's a documentary about the internet and what's going to happen to humans and technology. And they were talking about how they're advancing MRIs and how far that's come along. And they were saying how they could, if you put someone in an MRI machine and you give them a Portuguese text and they're reading it, that they can tell which text or what language you're reading just by the way your brain is reacting, which I thought was super fascinating.
Wow.
Kind of scary.
I know. Yeah. Too much information and details. It's just going to be scary.
It is. In the future, maybe we'll be talking about robot art, which I think probably already exists.
Yeah.
They're getting smarter. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So you're kind of big into language and art. Is that something that just happened, or you think that it's something that you consciously went after?
Oh, I think a bit of both, because when I moved here, you know, I was speaking like Farsi my whole life. I learned English during high school. And I love like learning like languages, but it was so funny because when we got here, I was speaking English like with other people, but at home I'm still speaking Farsi. But it was so funny that I was thinking in Farsi and speaking in English. And even when I was at GSI and I was teaching like at a class, and when I wanted to count the students, I was counting them in Farsi. Because when I was counting them in English, I was like, oh my God, I cannot do this. Still with like numbers, I cannot do it English. Like I cannot memorize like numbers in English.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had a German teacher once who was from Romania, and somebody said, and she would always tell people, try to think in German because that'll help your language. And somebody asked her how she thought, and she said, I think in Romanian.
Yeah.
because you can't, it's hard to escape that pull of your roots, like where you grew up. It's just ingrained.
Yeah. That's so true. So that was really interesting for me, like that switch that I have to, you know, now there's another language added to my like library of, you know, of things that I have, and I have to like use it. I have to think with other language. And even like very first time that we got here, and I was like struggling with my English because the way that we learned English at home was different than here, and people are talking so fast, and it just was just so hard to follow. So, and it was funny that I was practicing, like whenever I wanted to go out and shop, I was just practicing the things that I wanted to say. Just want to make sure, or before my meetings with my advisor, I was just practicing things, you know?
Right. Isn't that so strange that, I don't know how it is, you grew up in Iran, right? I don't know how it is there, but it seems like here, if you want to learn French or German, they'll teach you things like, where is the library?
Yeah.
Would you like to go to the store? Like, but it just doesn't know how anybody talks.
I know.
It's so slang driven, and I think Americans in particular are very heavy on slang. It changes all the time.
That's so true. Yeah.
So I saw a video that you did for, I think it was Art Prize 7. It was last year, right?
Yeah.
And it was, you had a work up, I think it was called Wish You Weren't Here.
Yeah.
Right? You said something really interesting in this regard. And you said that language, when you don't know it, it just becomes like a decorative thing.
Yeah.
Because you don't understand the meaning of it.
Exactly.
You're just looking at it as some sort of artwork with shapes and lines and all that. I thought that was really interesting because that's how I look at Chinese art sometimes. Like like modern Chinese art.
Yeah.
Is that something that happened to you when you first came here?
Yeah. You know, yes. It was also interesting for people to watch me, how I write, because it's from right to left.
Really?
Farsi. Yeah.
Oh,
my. So people were like, what are you doing? Like, I'm writing. So all these little things, you know, it was also fascinating for me because these are little details that you don't pay attention. But when you are out of that context, everything becomes bold and interesting. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't know I've been doing this for years. And, you know, and I never noticed that, you know, other people are just writing other way. And it's just fascinating, you know.
It would be fascinating if you wrote English right to left. I don't know if you don't do that, right?
No. That could be my next project.
It could be, yeah. That's so fascinating because if you see the word mountain and you don't know what it means and you at first and you just have all these images of like it's a piece of art and then you learn what the word means, do you still look at it both ways? Are there words that you see and you think, oh, I remember when I thought that was just a beautiful painting, but now I know it means the word burrito.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
Maybe subconsciously, I don't know.
Yes, yeah, I think so, yeah.
So does that, for the Art Prize 7 entry, that was, how did that go? Did people find that idea, that concept fascinating that you talked with?
Yeah, they really like the idea and like, because many people have experienced like immigration and displacement and moving around, so And while I was there, I was talking to people about like their experience, and they were like, oh my God, you know, my mom moved and I know that she had the same feelings, you know, and this misfit and like that you don't not fit into places that
right.
you go and the transition and everything. So it was really interesting for people. And the other interesting part was that some people didn't even know read those writings. As they didn't consider it as writing and some sort of language. And when I was telling them that, oh, these are poems that are related to imagery, and they was like, oh my God, we thought that these are just like, as you mentioned, lines and forms. And it was interesting for me, like how when there is something like a barrier, like a visual barrier that people cannot go past that, it becomes like decorative.
Right.
It doesn't communicate at all.
It means something completely different to them.
Yes. Yeah.
It could be the most horrible word or sentence in the world, and they might view it as beautiful, which is really interesting.
I know. It could be like an insult or a
sure.
You know?
That's, yeah.
Okay. I have so many ideas now.
Oh, no. The vulgar artist. That's the birth of your new direction here. What did you think about Art Prize in general? Was that the first one you had been to, or do you go every year?
Yeah, that was the first one I've been to, and I ever applied, and I was lucky to get into the art museum because that was like I think that was a very prestigious place. And so it was a very nice experience for me because I think every day they had like over 1,000 crowd, and it was just super, like, it was very crowded, and people were like asking questions. They were interested in the work. They were very engaged. And it was a very interesting experience for me to exhibit my work at a museum, you know, because I've been exhibiting at like galleries with a smaller crowd.
Right.
And yeah, but this was a very like interesting experience for me to just say, oh my God, my work is going to be seen by over, I don't know, like in total after the duration of the art prize, how many people visited my work, but that was like beyond.
Yeah. Probably a lot. Art prize is pretty big now. It's grown a lot.
Yeah.
It was big in the beginning, but I think especially now, I think there's Art Prize 8. Is that something you want to do in the future again, maybe, if you had a good experience?
Yeah, you know, but I didn't apply for this year because I thought that I don't have a work that, you know, speaks to the theme. And also I just wanted to have something which really fits, you know. So, yeah, definitely. I think it's such a great experience. You know, like I had another residency at Red Bull House of Art in Detroit.
Okay.
And like for the opening, I think there were over like 2,000 people.
Wow.
And for me, it was like, oh my God, I was overwhelmed because I never had like this many audience. And it was like, oh my God, this is great. And, you know, I was there and I was talking to people, and it was just so interesting because of the diversity of the people and like the different readings that they had from the work, which was very interesting for me. Like even I learned a lot, like, oh my God, you read this and I didn't intend it. And maybe that's the way, you know, I don't know. It was just interesting to learn from people.
Yeah. Grand Rapids, Art Prize, that's a big one. Detroit is super interesting though. I mean, that's the city in this state that has this huge history of art and street art and these incredible artists that have reached out in so many genres. Do you like to go there a lot, and or is that something that interests you, that city, especially since it's kind of coming back a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I try to go to Detroit exhibitions once a month, ideally.
Right.
Sometimes not. But I think it's just... it's getting back on its feet, and it is.
I remember going there as a kid and it was just awful. I mean, it was so dangerous and it just seemed like I hadn't traveled outside of the country besides Canada when I was younger, but to me it seemed like a war zone almost, and it was just burnt out buildings and it seemed like chaos. But now when I go down there, it feels like it's finally starting to get back on its feet. But it has art on murals and buildings and stuff that represent not just where it is now, but all the turmoil that's happened through the decades. So it makes it a really interesting part of the culture, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're trying to attract like famous artists, even graffiti artists. I remember Shepard Fairey.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and he did the murals. I think it was somewhere in downtown.
Yeah, it was at the Library Street Collective. Did you go? Yes. Did you go to that?
Yeah,
did too. I was there. We must have passed. Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
It was huge, right?
Yeah, because Matt was the director of the Red Bull House of Art, and I know him. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Matt even runs the gallery.
Yeah, that was a big opening. That was really fun. They had the.
Yeah.
Everything was happening.
Yeah. So you live here close by?
Or? Yeah, not far. Just about an hour outside of downtown Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, I live in Lansing. So
I'm into Lansing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting area, Lansing, Ann Arbor, Detroit, like those areas. Lots of art happening, which I think is definitely good. And the cities are sort of changing shape a little bit. I don't know about Ann Arbor so much. But it feels very vibrant, very alive.
It is, yeah.
So do you, you do a lot of video work as well, which I've seen some of your videos. And one of the things I love about them is that they're short. And I don't mean that they're terrible, so they're short and I can get it over with. I mean, like, I love artwork that's super long or super short. That I feel that that's very interesting. And you had a work called Take Care, which was a woman on a couch and like in the background, you could see an empty chair and it was maybe 30 seconds. It was rocking. Yeah, it was rocking. I love that. Cause I felt like that was sort of like putting a mirror up to the rest of the population. I'm not sure what your intention was or if you like to talk about intention at all, but I felt like she might as well be watching Netflix or something, and the empty chair in the back was kind of like she's waiting for something, and I thought she thought it was interesting.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was a piece that it was in response to a loss that I had when I lost my mom, but I was here and I couldn't go back because of visa complications, and so that was something that I was dealing with in my work for a long time. Because I didn't have any resolution for that, you know, there were so many unresolved things for me that I didn't have any answer for it. So I was trying to kind of resolve it for myself through my work, like with different media, with different kind of like iterations, and trying to see which one speaks to me and to people who have the same, who had the same experience.
Is that you on the couch?
No, it's my friend.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think whenever somebody leaves whatever this is and goes somewhere else, there are always unresolved things, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, the interesting thing is that we try to normalize things very, very fast. So, and we want to show that, okay, we're back to normal life, and we try to, you know, distract ourselves, but there's always something in the background, which is, you know, exists.
Right.
So that was the intention.
That's interesting. When you say normalize, is there a hint of denial in that word? Okay.
For sure.
Sure. That makes sense. I do think about that a lot. When people pass on or move on, the world just keeps going, and it makes me almost sadder to think about how we should all just kind of stop and go, oh wow, they're gone. I mean, you have to move on eventually, but
yeah,
this normalization is, I think, in some ways almost heavier than the death itself.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're part of a machine, taking part in this normalization process. It's just, we're to somebody else, we're just like an ant. Mm-hmm. Moving these things from parts of the city to another part.
That's true. Yeah.
Is that something that you thought about also when you do works, or this work in particular, or works in general?
About what?
About like the structure of society, about how we're moving, how we deal with things. Are we can't sit around and dwell on death, I guess, all the time, but is that a huge part of or do you try to separate what you create from that?
You know, I think both. I try to like, yeah, I think it's both. Like, just put some light, like shed some light on my own experience and put it in context with like a larger community and within the society and how like the norms mm-hmm. and things that, you know, we value, like, and it's a culture thing. Like when I was in Iran and I was mourning and people were like, oh, you have to pull yourself together. You know, it's not the end of the world. And, you know, it's just don't cry, be strong. But here, when I got here, my friends were like, oh, you can come and sit and cry whenever you want. And I was like, really? So... And that was like very interesting for me, like how different cultures deal with mourning and yeah. like grief, like the grief process. I remember I took a course at the School of Social Work here, and I think the title was Death, Grief, and Loss. And it, like, I learned a lot from that course about like how we experience loss and how we have to let ourselves, like, let that grief, like, I don't know how to word that, but let things settle down.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Not rush things, you know? It's like a physical wound when you have a wound on your body. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do like to expedite the healing. You
sure.
know, you just have to just let it heal. You know, it's just a matter of time.
Right. Yeah.
But when there is like a mental thing that you don't see and you cannot express it like as a physical thing, people can't see, people cannot understand, and they just want you to be good as soon as possible, you know?
Yeah. You have to, it's the process, the natural order of the process or the organic process is whatever it is. It's not something that if you're feeling grief or you have a physical wound, it feels like we're sort of forced a little bit to hurry up that process.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like these burgers aren't going to sell themselves. So you need to pull yourself together and work that drive through. And I don't care who died in your life. This is, you want to have a house, don't you? You want to have bills paid, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. You have to, take care of like your family. You have to be like when you're in like among the crowd or you are with your friends, you don't want to upset people, you know, because mm-hmm. everybody is dealing with their own problems, you know, so you don't want to add to their pile, you know, but at the same time, something is eating you, you know?
Right. And something's probably eating them too, what we never,
yeah.
In certain situations where you're in a large group of people, you can't, it feels like you can't just let your problems go, and neither, they feel that, I'm sure, as well. When you get into a smaller group, it feels like you can have a more realistic conversation about, like, I am really struggling here, like, I don't know, I'm very upset lately.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get into this, the more humans you add to the mix, it gets weird.
I know.
That's my own social...
Glad to hear that.
It feels like the more you hear people say something like that, the more relaxed it gets and people feel a little bit more willing to open up. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes
me
feel better if somebody's just like, yeah, I'm depressed. Or I don't like where I'm going with my life, or I don't like the work that I'm putting out right now, or something like that. Just honesty.
I know, exactly.
When you think about your process for work, are you good at shutting out those life problems and just working on the work, or do you like to invite those things in and be sort of a chaotic artist?
Yeah, I think I will definitely invite them all in. You know, all my work is just it comes from like my personal experiences, you know. It's just something that I deal with like every day, you know, or like there are things that are on my mind. And I just look at all the other artists who have the same struggles. Like I know Doris Salceda, she's also working with like the idea of like immigration, displacement, you know, all these things. And I just try to, yeah, I think, yeah, my work definitely comes from my personal experiences. And when I have like, and I want to start a new project, I just go back to my life and just see what are the things that I want to share with people and what are the things that are relatable, you know?
I think that's the same for me too. Do you know, I don't know if you know the composer John Cage, who's an
Yeah.
American. Okay. So he had the idea that when composers made music, that the sounds that were happening had their own life. They were their own thing. They existed on their own. And he believed too often humans want to project their own meaning onto these sounds and it suffocates the real meaning. I don't know if that would apply to art or video art because we're seeing something visual.
That's true.
So I feel like the art world has a bit more leeway when it comes to that because sounds are just something that we hear. They're literally sound waves coming through, moving through the universe or whatever, and we hear them, their vibrations. Video art exists in the same way, but we're seeing something. So I don't know if that applies or if it does.
Oh, that was interesting. I never thought about that separation, you
Yeah.
know?
I because sometimes it feels like there are artists sometimes who elevate themselves to the front of every work, which I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, but
Yeah, you know, one thing that I learned during my grad school was not to put everything in the work and, you know, try to just create a work which tries to like tap on every issues that like the artist or the society deals with, you know, and make a complex work, or it could be either complex or a one-liner at the same time, you know. So, but I don't know. I personally like the work of artists that are that they have a personal touch in it, you know. It's just frustrating for me to see something which is very banal and, you know, like that I've seen many like 100 times, and you know, and then the artist tries to add all these layers to it, which is not genuine. You know what I mean?
Right. It's almost like hiding b behind something. Like you're
Exactly.
right.
Yeah. But when you create something with that thought process, you know, I'm sure that the end result would be different rather than create something and trying to, you know, just force everything in it.
Yeah, I wonder if whatever you do, if you just try to emulate someone else and put layers on to hide it, or if you try to have a unique style or voice, it probably will always look or sound like you. But
Yeah.
I do love the idea of every artist creating or inventing something that's never been created before with their own touch.
Yeah.
And that's how what we do as humans, right? I mean, it might sound vain, but that's what we do. We try to distinguish ourselves from others. We're constantly maybe comparing ourselves to others, artists or people who live in the house down the block. They've got a better house, or is my house okay? Is my car or whatever? That's what we do. So I don't know why it would change in art.
Yeah, that's true. Oh,
Enough of my ranting, I think. Like, I
no.
don't
It's
know.
interesting
So,
to.
do you notice a huge difference between the art you were creating in Iran as opposed to here? Does place affect what you create?
You know, when I was in Iran, I was a graphic designer, so I wasn't considered as a fine artist. I didn't create work for exhibitions or like submitting to galleries or stuff. I was a I'm a graphic designer, and I was working as a graphic designer in an advertising agency, and I was submitting, like, I was designing posters and applying to, like, poster festivals.
Oh, okay.
Like, ever. But
what's a poster festival?
Oh, you know, it's just like a poster competition thing.
Oh, okay. That
for, like, graphic designers. So they have either they have a theme or not. But like the one that I got a prize for was for anti-AIDS in Ukraine, which I got the second award. And it was just, it's just like there were like certain websites that you check on and you can see like where there's a poster competition. And some of them are like very prestigious. And it's good to have those on your resume. Yeah. And it was interesting for me because there was no graphic design major here, like the U of M. It only had I think they had graphic design for undergrads, but like their graduate degree was fine arts, which was very interesting for me. Like, you know, I was very interested because I was just sitting at the computer all the time because of the graphic design work, and I totally forgot how good it feels to work with your hands and create things, you know. So that was one thing that I wanted to try, fine arts. And it was funny, like, for the first month of studying at the for my MFA, I was waiting for my advisor to tell me what to do because I was like trained as a graphic designer. There was always a client or my manager, you know, somebody who gives me the work, and you know, I was doing it
right
for fine art. And I was asking my cohort, like, did anybody tell you like what to do? Or I'm like, no, you can create anything you want. And I was like, really? Like anything? I'm like, yeah. They have to like follow your creative process, and you don't have to like listen. Not to listen to them, but those are the people who have to fit with your, you know, creative process, which was very interesting for me. So I went crazy. I was like, yeah, I want to try metal. I want to cast things, you know, I want to try everything. And that was, very interesting.
So it took you in a completely different direction then. It was like opened up a whole world of where you didn't have perhaps limitations on how you were to create things. You just... In some ways, is that like the internet? There's almost too much power there. Like, do you like to have some structure or some?
You know, I still have that graphic design mind because I'm very structured. Like the way even that I come up with an idea, and like the way that I sketch, and the way I, you know, like the process is very structured for me. I think I have that graphic design mind, but. I really like that freedom of choosing like different media, and it was interesting for me because at the same time, I had this limitation for myself that, okay, you have this concept and you have this media and you have to pick, you know, it's not that you can like have this concept and like try it with different media, because like at the end, I had to pick one which fits like this concept, which was very interesting for me. And it was, I think that was the beginning of like my thought process about like for each project I was doing, it in a different media, because I was amazed by how each media serves the concept in its unique way.
It's so interesting to me that we never really escape structure. We try to, whatever you're talking about, arts or religion or political systems, you grow up, and if you are able to get away from that, it's something that takes a lot of effort and years of work to deprogram yourself, if you can even do it.
I know.
Completely.
Yeah.
So it's kind of always with you. So you're just, there'll be a part of you that always thinks like a graphic designer.
Yeah.
Blowing up at poster showings
all
over.
Yeah.
Do you think, are there more artistic opportunities here than Iran that you even though you weren't really involved in that, do you feel like it's a different ball game, different things happening?
You know, as I mentioned, because when I was in Iran, I wasn't part of like the fine art community.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to exhibitions, you know, but I think that right now things have changed a lot since I moved, because now I think like it's more open, like the art scene is more open, and like the young artists are more like they have this freedom to express themselves, and they have all this like work that have the comments on like social norms, and they critique the society, which is very interesting for me, you know, like, okay. And sometimes because I follow most of them on Instagram or Facebook, and I try to get myself update about like, you know, all the things that happen in Iran and keep up with, you know, all the art thing. And it was interesting for me to see like, oh, they can show like women without like hijab, and they can have their exhibitions there. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting for me that people trying to create their own mini societies, you know?
Yeah,
that was a fascinating part for me, that I think that nowadays it's very hard to, except I think nudity, other things, I think it has changed a lot.
They'll get there, maybe. Is nudity will on down the road someday, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that it's any better that we do it, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it, but
yeah, you know, that was one thing that I'm still trying to, that's an ongoing project that my friend and I are trying to bring some like the work of all these younger generation artists to hear, to just break that stigma and, you know, stereotype look that all people from here accept, like that, okay, like artists in Iran, they all their work is about hijab and, you know, all these things. But when you see the work of young artists, like even like the newer generation, my generation, yes, that could be true because we were born during the war, and you know, it was right after the revolution, and it was all this social and political upheaval. But for the younger generation now, I can see that they all deal with more universal themes.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that I really wanna like bring their work here and say like, this is like the Iran art scene today, you know, it's not that black and white and, you know, dark.
I wonder if technology is pulling everybody in that same direction. Like you can't, it's in, even in North Korea, it's inevitable. They're not going to be able to stop the flow of the internet. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's pulling everyone into this singular point, maybe where we're just, nudity is going to be just a common thing at some point. It's a tough one, though, nudity in particular, because I don't know if it's everybody in the world has sort of been conditioned to cover up that. And because you think about sex and you think about infidelity and you think about lifestyle choices or whatever it is. And I'm not saying any of those things are bad. I'm just saying that's what comes to your mind because we're so used to covering up. Even in the U.S., you can go topless, or women or men can go topless in parks or wherever in certain cities. But we still have this idea that if we see a naked body, we think of certain things rather than the artistic things, I think.
Yeah. That's very normal.
Yeah. So it's not just me.
No, nothing's wrong with that. Okay.
The whole world is perverted. It's not just me. Okay, all right. Yes. I feel much better.
We are all together in this.
Unity, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll get to a point where, if it's possible, that we will see a naked body, male or female or whichever, and we do think about the beauty of it without thinking about the religious aspect or the moral aspect or whatever it is. I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe. If we turn into robots, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if robots will think about that. We wouldn't want them to be and, like us necessarily.
That far.
I don't know if it'd be a good or bad thing if robots, when they happen, will take on human attributes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to even think about that. I'm just so scared of the new technologies and robots replacing human. I was less scared. I was like, yeah, what's wrong with the world, you know?
Yeah. Are there things that you miss about the pre-internet world? If you remember that world, I don't know if that's... It hasn't been around that long, right? 20 years, maybe. So are there... I think that's all gone, but are there things that sound good to you? Like even just taking a hike or turning your device off?
You know, one thing that I really miss is, and I wrote something about it on my Facebook, was the idea of waiting.
Oh, yes.
Yes. You know, and the idea of like the yearning to see someone, to hear someone's voice, to hearing news from them, you know, because right now, like, I remember that, like, the very first month that we moved here, we didn't, like, I didn't have a smartphone, and I didn't have all these, like, Viber, like all this Instagram and everything, which is now made everything very instant.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was emailing my friends, and there was this bad internet in Iran, and they have to wait, and they was, you know, it took them like, I don't know, several days to even respond to me. And that waiting was very exciting for me. And I think that now it's all gone.
Yeah.
It can be good and bad. You know, it can be good because everything is very accessible right now, because when I want to ask one of my friends in Iran a question, or it's a work-related thing, I just text them, and it feels like they're here, and they just respond right back to me, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm amazed. But at the same time, for like other things, like when I want to talk about myself, like the life here, like my feelings, and I just can't do it with this, like, chatting back and forth, and it feels very mundane.
I agree with you. I think waiting is so sexy because we don't do it. I had one of my friends once lost his phone, or he left his phone at home, and his wife was supposed to pick him up or something, and so he went to where he was saying that he went to where she normally picks him up after work, and he just waited. He didn't know. He was hoping that she was there. And he said for like 20 minutes, it was great because time wasn't scripted. He didn't know for sure what was going to happen. And up until 20 years ago, that was how everything worked. You didn't know if your friend was going to show up at the restaurant or wherever. You just hoped. And if they didn't, you'd talk to him later.
Yeah.
And I think we missed that because we those are maybe the moments where we, especially for artists, where we might get ideas and create things or have inspiration from those experiences rather than constantly typing into our
devices. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I so agree with you. Yeah.
Good. Nudity, waiting. We're on the same page here.
Yes.
I think people are going to get behind this.
Okay.
So that idea of waiting too reminds me of the other work that you did that I saw on your Vimeo page. I don't know, but did you put anything on YouTube, or did you just go Vimeo?
I just use Vimeo.
I like it so much classier. It feels cleaner. Yeah, and
I know.
I don't know. There's no, there aren't more ads. Yeah.
Right? I think at least for artists, like I think that most of like the artists prefer Vimeo over YouTube.
I think so too. I don't know why it looks better, but it just does. It feels cleaner and simple, and I don't know. But you had a video on there with people waiting at the airport.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what that was called.
It was called Detachment.
Oh, Detachment. That's a good one. Yeah. And you had for people who haven't seen it yet, and they can go on to your site on Vimeo and watch it, and I've put it on a collection under mine. And I'll put links up for that. It's like three screens, right? The screen is divided into thirds, and you get all these different reactions of people looking out of a door at loved ones who are taking off or arriving at airports. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to reenact an airport scene, like where we experience like different emotions, like the excitement of like we are waiting for an arrival of someone, or we are saddened by like departing of one of our, you know, one of the people that we love, or like that we are the person who are leaving, you know, or coming back. Mm-hmm. So all these like mixed feelings, because every time I go home, I have this weird feelings, you know, like my families are waiting for me and I'm the person who's arriving, and when they're visiting here, they're the one who's leaving and I'm here, and it's just all this, you know, confusion and things like that. So I hate airports. I hate, you know, like, it's just like very, so I thought it's a very loaded place.
Emotionally, everything.
Yeah. So, and I was, and I thought it's a universal experience for people. Like, I'm sure that everyone go to the airport for like their own reason. Even it's a business trip, for vacation, it shouldn't be always like sad and teary, and you know. But
well, it means something, right? It's either they're taking a vacation or they've got a business trip that, and but they're separating from their family, or they're heading towards their family, and it's, there's always some sort of, you're right, some sort of powerful aspect to it that affects you emotionally, I think.
Exactly, yeah. Even when, I'm sure that when people go on business trip, maybe at the bottom of their heart, they hope that, you know, somebody will be there to pick them up, and you know.
Oh, no.
No, I don't know.
I feel sad for them.
Yeah.
It's happened to me where you just show up and you're like, oh, nobody's here. I'll just take the taxi. I don't know.
Yeah.
We've all been there. It is strange, though. Airports have this weird vibe to them. I don't like them. I'll do them because I have to. Yeah. Everybody does. But yeah, it does have that weird sense of emotional detachment, or people are excited or sad for some reason. It's never, we try to act in the middle, you know, just like we get into large groups, what we were saying earlier, you don't want to let people see your problems or visibly expose yourself. But yeah, it's so strange that we have reached this point in technology where travel has become, I mean, you can go around the world by the end of the day if you wanted to right now. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe both. I don't know.
Yeah.
I often rant about airports, so no.
Yeah, okay.
Do you feel when you go back to visit Iran, do you have a hard time distinguishing which is home, or does each have a different meaning?
You don't want to go there.
Oh no. Uh-oh. Let's not. Uh-oh.
No, that's fine. I talk about it. So, you know, I think for me, the home is still Iran, you know, because I think I've grown up there and I've been there most of my time there. So when I moved, I was 26, you know, so now I'm 33. So it was just only 7 years that I've been here compared to 26-year-old. And I think that, yeah, Iran is definitely home. And it's just so hard for me because whenever I come back, it's just, I have this depression for like a month or so after I come back, because I just try to, rethink everything, you know, and just try and say, oh, why I'm here, you know, what am I doing here, what my dad will do without me, and all this guilt, you know, which is suffocating. It can be really and frustrating, you know, because I go in circle. It's just, there's no answer for it, and it's like a natural order of life, because people are not living with their parents, you know, for the rest of their lives, you know. It's just a very natural thing that you grow up and you leave. But at this distance, I think it can be problematic, you know.
Yes.
It's just, it's not very accessible for me to go there. It's about like, it takes me like about 28 hours to get there, you know.
Wow.
Even with airplanes and, you know, and I'm not talking about trains or cars.
Right. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I think tons of people are probably experiencing that, because I don't know if we've ever lived in a period where people are have moved so far and so often from where they grew up. I lived in England for a while, and then I lived in Oregon on the West Coast for several years. And it's moving from one English speaking place to another is not as stark a difference as what you're experiencing. But I did experience that guilt a little bit. I felt like I'm not seeing my siblings. I'm not watching people grow up. People are dying while I'm away. Like what am I, how do I fix this?
Yes, exactly.
I don't know if we can. Can we fix this?
I don't think so. It's just very, it's unreversible. You miss things. You keep missing things, you know? It's just you miss, like, I missed my nephew growing up. I was there for her, for his, first birthday. And last week, it was his, eighth birthday. And I told him that, I haven't been in any of your birthday. And it just made me really sad. I was it's just, the picture that he has from an aunt is just something in the computer or, someone who texts him, it's just something very virtual.
it could not even be real as far as.
I know.
Interesting.
How can I prove that I'm a real person?
I think you're right. I don't know how we get past this because once you leave, when I moved to Oregon, I really missed Michigan and I missed my family and all that. And so I moved back last year and it's great, but now I'm realizing I miss Portland and all my friends there and all, so you can never get away from it. Once you leave, you're just screwed forever.
Yeah. That reminds me of a quote that I had in my thesis. It was by Emily Dickinson, which said that distance and death are the same. Once you are gone, you are gone,
Wow. That's heavy. Yeah. It's good, though. It's good. Those poets, they know something.
I know.
Once you're, what was it again? What was that? The distance and death are the same.
Death are the same. Once you are gone, you are gone. No, I think, it's heavy.
That's very heavy. Yeah. I think Mark Twain said once, everywhere and nowhere at home too. That. Mm-hmm. So that's multiple homes. Maybe we're either the luckiest people in the history of humanity who whine a lot about being able to go to all these exotic places, or we're the victims of this technological craze, or maybe it's a mixture of both. I'm not sure, and we haven't figured out how to deal with it.
I think I was reading something about this, and it was on a bright side, looking on the bright side. It was like, oh, it's good because you have two of everything. You have two homes, you speak two languages, you have two places, to visit. It's just to look on the bright side, that's true. It's lucky to have this opportunity to explore the world and, not to be stuck in one place. And it's a great learning experience. I don't regret that part at all.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know how it was for you growing up, but it felt like for me growing up, travel was always emphasized as a way to expand your mind and to learn about other cultures and the diversity and experience all these things. And it's great. It's fulfilling. The downside of that nobody tells you is that you feel that displacement of home.
For sure. Yeah, I know.
I think that's a good motto for a travel company to go we're going to change your life for the better. Maybe.
But you're never home.
You'll never go home again.
Yeah. That's true.
Thank you for listening. Art House Radio is brought to you by people like you who go to our website, arthouse43.com. You click on that word donate. You know that word? You click on it, and then you spread some of your cash, love, our way. We're not a nonprofit. We're an LLC. For better or worse, it's just us swimming in the sea of capital and love and hate and hope and death. We're out there trying to make it. Creative projects are never free, so any support you could give would be greatly appreciated. I mean, just part a little bit with your cash. Let's face it, the American dollar, it's not going to be worth much for very long, right? So why don't you just spread that little worthless currency around, throw some our way, and then we can keep putting out conversations like the one you heard today, which I'm sure you enjoyed. I hope you did anyway. So I hope you had fun. This was a lot of fun to talk with Parisa. Next episode, I'm talking with comedian Alicia Sanchez. It's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy that one and you stick around and keep downloading. Thank you so much for all you've done. Check us out on facebook.com/arthouse43, at Instagram, at arthouse43 on Insta and Twitter. And we'll connect there. I hope you have a wonderful day. I really do. Whenever you're listening to this, if this is night or if it's morning or if it's midday, I hope you know that people out there love you and people just want to be loved and you should love them back and initiate things. Tell people good things. Let's just spread that. Is that what we should do? I think it's a pact, right? Let's have better interactions. Start right now. Right now, every interaction you have builds towards something great, positive and uplifting. So let's do that. Why would we do anything else? All right. So I will see you in episode 51. Have a great day. I love you. All right. So there you go. Until next time, friends.